Let's go in-depth on Iowa State with the Des Moines Register. It's time for Cyclone Insider, powered by G-Migs 5th Street Pub on 1460 KXNO.
All right, Cyclone Insider here, the Des Moines Register on 1460 KXNO. So here's what we're doing in the 6 o'clock hour. I knew that the 4 and 5 o'clock hours were going to go the way that they did. So my weekly interview with Matt Campbell will be at 6:45 tonight. That will not be a part of Cyclone Insider, but I've got Tommy here for the first segment. I spoke with Randy Peterson. We did an interview earlier today from Ames with everything that was going on up there. So that will be coming up here in about, 15, 20 minutes or so.
What do you mean about everything going on up there again?
We're not touching it. There's actually, and I'm glad that we saved this to do live, because there's actually breaking news coming out of Ames, and that is that Rasir Bolton, the Penn State graduate transfer, was made eligible today. The NCAA ruled on it. This happened while we were on the air. I have not seen anything on it, so you'll have to fill me in.
Yeah, right now, I think it was round 4, Iowa State announced the news, so basically cleared, good to go. He's eligible immediately, so Iowa State's going to have some much-needed experience, some much-needed scoring, and a much-needed body just for their roster right now. I mean, I think this kind of takes Iowa State from a, man, they could be all right, to, wow, you know, this could be a pretty interesting Iowa State team.
If everything gels.
Yeah.
He's a, from what I understand, too, just asking around up there, and I do the Athlon previews every, this is funny, and this is a little maybe inside baseball for some of our listeners, but I think most Iowa State fans listening would probably care. So we do those magazines, you have to write them early so it can go to print, you know, these preview magazines, and I had to, it was due in like around the 4th of July, and I'm going to my editor, I'm like, well, what, you know, because this is like a really big missing piece. And I didn't know how to write the story because exactly what you just said. Like, I think that this piece could potentially be the difference in, like, maybe a long shot to be a second weekend NCAA tournament team. Notice I said long shot, or not even making the tournament, you know, to being like an NIT team. I think it's a really big piece for them.
I mean, what are you talking about for next season, at least this upcoming season, the Iowa State's valuably missing. It's scoring.
Yeah.
What I think 4 of their top 5 scorers from a season ago are gone. And experience. I mean, you're talking about, besides guys like Michael Jacobson, but guys like Tyrese Halliburton being your most experienced players. And granted, Bolton's got, you know, a good amount of playing time. But man, this really checks off 2 of those boxes that you desperately need: experience and scoring. And he's proven he can do that. I mean, he's a guy that reached double figures in 20 games. He's done at a Power 5 level, too.
Yeah, and it sounds like he's had a good offseason, too. As you would expect, a lot of these transfers, they come in, and I almost feel like they're the best type of recruit to get because they know they've been in that, you know, college isn't new to them. The weights aren't new to them, and they have a better perspective.
This is all you got to know when it comes to, I guess, what type of, impact that, Bolton could have right away. I mean, anytime Steve Prohm talked about this, anytime the question was posed to him about the eligibility status of him, he did not hide or shy away from the idea that this is going to be a major impact player. He's not easing him into things. He's not tempering expectations. Even Prohm has been pretty upfront and adamant about, look, it's not only that we want Bolton to be eligible, we need him to be eligible and to be a big time factor right away. And I think that speaks volumes too.
Have you heard anything Tommy, this all was happening while we were on the air. Did we get any reasoning or any specifics on the NCAA deal here about why he was approved? Because it's still really not out yet that I'd seen.
No, it's going to be interesting to see. But I know Randy Peterson had reported that at least, let me make sure I get the correct wording.
Yeah, just because while you're looking, this has been such a long process. Like, usually it's like a 3-4 week deal after you put in the paperwork, and this has been months.
Yeah, and according to Pete's reporting, Penn State had also submitted documentation to the NCAA supporting his request. So obviously that goes a long ways, and I think that adds some intrigue to it too.
Yeah, the fact that the school that he left thought he deserved to be eligible immediately.
Absolutely. I mean, that speaks volumes right there. It tells you a great deal.
Yeah, man, it's just, it's still such a, like, we used the word transparency a lot in the last 2 hours, and I still don't really know why certain guys and gals are allowed to play immediately and why others aren't.
I mean, if you would have told me a year ago Kyle Kemp is going to get that 6 year of eligibility, I remember when I first started hearing whispers that, hey, Kyle Kemp is looking at getting another year of eligibility. At first, I didn't really take it seriously, mm-hmm. and I didn't even comprehend it because I thought it was so far-fetched and so unlikely that he was even going to have an opportunity to get another year of eligibility, that it just didn't seem realistic to me. And I thought there was no chance the NCAA was going to give him that extra year. And then there have been other situations, too, where I've looked at it and said, that guy, shoo-in. It's going to happen.
He'll get it, and he never does.
It's past the point where I think you can accurately predict what the NCAA has done. And part of the problem is they have not been very open and forthcoming about, hey, these are the guidelines, these are the things that we're looking for when it comes to possibly granting a waiver. But the one thing that I found interesting is throughout this whole process, Iowa State seemed very, very confident that this was going to go their way.
Yeah, they certainly did. And that's why, like, the Athlon's already out. Actually, I already have, I don't know if it's on newsstands, but I have my copy that I get in the mail.
So which way did you go?
I went with they were getting him. And I think I made it in the lead somewhat loose, like they're waiting on it. But I wrote the story as if he was going to be eligible. And when I got that in my mailbox, I think it was last week, I was like, man, this is really going to blow up if not. But no,
but I think that's part of the problem, too, is we were left with this issue for so long. I know at least those of us in the media thought, like, wow.
I was starting to think he wasn't going to get it.
And to me, the thought process, the longer it drags on, the longer it takes, it probably doesn't bode well for Iowa State.
That's what I thought, too.
Because what? I think you're kind of hearing the same things I was, that maybe like a week or two ago is when we're going to hear something.
Yeah.
And I think once it had reached that point, we were thinking, this can't be good.
Iowa State hung 72 points on Louisiana Monroe.
I did not see that coming one bit. I laughed at the idea, because what was the over-under
for
that game? It was
56.5. It was a lock to take the under.
Yeah, I mean, I was adamant that there was no way those I felt confident in saying that, because one, thought Iowa State's defense was going to play well enough, and then two, I knew Iowa State's offense had some oomph to them, had some potential, but I'd seen nothing to make me believe, like, okay, a massive offensive explosion was going to unfold.
Well, and we thought the weather was going to be bad. The weather turned out to be fine, but the field was still sloppy enough where I think it actually helped Iowa State in the sense of the, I think it helped offenses on Saturday, because, you know, when you're on offense, you know which way you're going.
Yeah.
And it looked like Louisiana Monroe did struggle with its footing and stuff. But, you know, my biggest takeaway, and you can hear my interview with Matt Campbell coming up at around 6:45, but you know, Tommy, I thought there was a difference in Iowa State in what we've seen in past years, where really the offense wasn't that good. They had really good individual players. The offense as a whole seemed not that efficient. When they did make plays, it was individual efforts, and it was, you know, Hakeem Butler making a freak type play, or
David Montgomery shedding five tackles going 30 yards for a touchdown.
What we saw on Saturday seemed very systematic to me.
Yeah, it was a collective effort where the offensive line's playing well. How many different targets did we see Brock Purdy hit? It wasn't him zeroing in on just DeShante Jones. It was DeShante Jones. It was Tariq Milton. It was the tight ends. It was all the tight ends. Everybody was getting involved. I think kind of the only maybe drawback to this is I kind of went into that game thinking, okay, this game is going to be the perfect opportunity for Iowa State to find its guy at running back, to find its main man, to find its dude that they were going to ride throughout the season. I mean, maybe they did in the aspect that it's going to be just Brock Purdy running the ball a ton, but I still think as you go into Big 12 play, even though all those running backs have kind of shown something, you know, Kane Nwangu's look good at times, Johnny Lang's shown some stuff, I still think you go into Big 12 play kind of like, okay, that's kind of a little bit of a worrisome aspect, because how big is Matt Campbell's offense just predicated on just moving the ball systematically, eating up large chunks of time on the clock, just controlling the game? That is going to be more important than ever as you go into Big 12 play.
Yeah, it will be. I think that Saturday is one of the more interesting games on the schedule. Just when you factor in, you know, the hierarchy of where the Big 12 is supposed to go this year, and you never really know until you get into the schedule where those teams are going to align. But then the history with these two teams, I don't think you can look past it. Everybody's kind of trying to push it aside, and you'll hear Matt do that in my interview with him. We heard him do it today. Matt Rhule wanted no part of that earlier this week, Baylor's head coach. But those locker rooms are like brotherhoods, man. Like, I know David Montgomery's not there and Akeem Butler's not there, but you tell me Josh Kniffel's not going to have a little bit of an extra chip on, and the Baylor players too. They feel like they were wrong at Ames last year. I think you're going, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it'll be a really, really hard-hitting game on Saturday.
Yeah, and I think Brewer even missed the end of that game too, because he got whistled
for
one unsportsmanlike
conduct. I forgot about that. You're right. Yeah, he absolutely did.
So, but yeah, to me, the biggest things are from the Iowa State perspective is that you don't have probably the two most pissed off guys from last year's game in Akeem Butler and David Montgomery. I do think, obviously, you do have that storyline where other guys are still going to remember it because, look, it was a pretty hostile, intense game. Yeah. At the end of the game, man, it just felt like it was brewing before that, too. Yeah. It was brewing.
I heard it was brewing in warm-ups.
Yeah.
I heard that there was, like, talking before the game last year.
Yeah. So it's going to be interesting to see, but so much time has passed, and there are so many different people gone that I don't know how much that's going to play out. But I do think for Iowa State's perspective, man, this is a perfect test to, I guess, kind of dip your feet into Big 12 play and road play, because look, it's not a bad Baylor team. It's a good Baylor team, but it's not an elite Baylor team. I mean, it's a team that almost lost to Rice. If Rice would have been halfway productive, probably should have won that game.
No, this is where I will just slightly disagree with you.
Slightly.
I think that, because we could say the same thing about Iowa State and Northern Iowa.
Absolutely.
That one with the triple overtime.
Yeah.
I still think you and I would both agree that Iowa State's a much better football team than Northern Iowa. Some things didn't go well in that game, and Northern Iowa rose to the occasion.
I would argue, though, that that was week one versus week three.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. I don't know. I feel like you'll appreciate this. I have a newborn. Watched that game at about 4 o'clock this morning. So it's very
the Baylor game.
Yeah, it's very fresh in my mind. And I don't know. I feel like if those two teams played 10 times, Baylor would win by 37 of them.
Maybe. They are a much talented, much more talented team than Rice.
I almost feel like, too, there's some connections with Rhule and that Rice staff.
Yep.
I don't know if he took the gloves off, like put some boxing gloves on and took it easy to him or what. I don't know. I think your point's valid. I think they're probably a little bit better than the way you described them, though. That's just my opinion. But it's still all subjective.
It does still seem like a Baylor team that Iowa State should go down there.
Well, they're the line movement was incredible.
Yeah, it's just moved off of Iowa State's
Well, it moved 5 points. Baylor opened at 3.5-point favorites. Now Iowa State's favorite in the football game, and that tells you the sharp money went in on Iowa State.
Yeah.
That's generally the betting professionals. It'll be interesting. The one thing Iowa State is battle-tested, you know, with that Iowa game, and Northern Iowa served that as well. Where Baylor's, I don't know, I feel like there's more to figure out with them.
Yeah. I think if you look at Iowa State's non-conference schedule, man, you got everything out of it that you would have liked. You got a chance to have a little bit of humble pie. You had a chance to go head-to-head with the team and really have to fight for a win. And then you got that confidence butt-whooping that you kind of need to get ready for that battle.
Yeah, I think that was just what the doctor ordered on Saturday.
I feel like Baylor just didn't have that wide mix. At least when it came to non-con. I mean, look, you're Stephen F. Austin, UTSA, Rice. I mean, those are all theoretically three just giant confidence-building wins. Where
vintage Baylor schedule.
Yeah. Where that last game, man, you had to fight and claw until those last 4 or 5 minutes. I mean, the game was in doubt.
Tommy, thanks for your time.
It was fun.
Very short one here today, but we're going to get to Randy Peterson. Randy and I sat down right after the band press conference and Matt Campbell's press conference today, and we talked about an array of things, a little bit on the band thing. And I'm going to Kansas City tomorrow for Braves Royals, and I'm hoping that when I come back on Thursday, I don't have to talk about the band thing again. Do you think I'll have to?
Yeah, I think you will.
All right. Done. Randy Peterson coming up, talking with him on Cyclone Insider. And then the Matt Campbell interview from today after that. He's Tommy Birch. I'm Chris Williams. That interview with Peterson coming up next here on 1460 KXNO.
Everything you need to know about Iowa State, it's Cyclone Insider with the Des Moines Register, powered by G-Migs Fifth Street Pub on 1460 KXNO.
Welcome back to Cyclone Insider here with the Des Moines Register on 1460 KXNO. Kind of a jumbled show today, as it was just really for the second Tuesday in a row, we've had a wild press day up in Ames with impromptu press conferences that were called. And today's, I've got Randy Peterson with me now, thanks to Tommy Birch for his contributions earlier. But Randy, just... I don't know. I feel like this is the Cy-Hawk week that will never end.
No, it won't. And I asked the question at the very end of the press conference, what's it going to take? What needs to be heard for this band investigation to be over? What needs to be heard? And it kept coming back to, well, nobody's come forward, no victim has come forward. That doesn't mean that the University of Iowa and Iowa State officials cannot start meeting and figure out how to get this crap stopped, because something happened. Something happened. They don't have to wait for victims to come forward. There's no statute of limitations on that. So
yeah, I think there's a difference between legal investigations and criminal investigations and moving forward on the Cy-Hawk series talk, which yesterday was President Harold at Iowa. I mean, I sensed a very different tone from him in that, but his was kind of one-sided. He wasn't really being asked questions. At least the Daily Iowan was there, but we didn't see those questions, right? We just saw the one 2-minute video or whatever, when it seemed like he was threatening the Cy-Hawk rivalry. We got a different feel from Iowa State today.
Yeah, exactly. And I even asked Matt after Jamie and Wendy Winterstein's press conference, what do you want to see this series continue? And he looked at me and it was like the dumbest question I ever asked. Of course he does. Of course he said he does. Or of course he does. So, you know, it's unfortunate that stuff happened. And it's whether it's here in Ames or whether it's in Iowa City, it doesn't excuse anything. And, you know, we heard all day about the Iowa band not using the suggested exit gate. So what? they still suffer. Does that mean that there's no abuse? Does that mean that the abuse that the allegations of the abuse, if in fact they're proven true, does that mean they should still be treated? They should still be treated like you would treat your kids and like I treat my kids. This is still a family atmosphere, family entertainment, and that, I'm afraid that's. Man, these
are. I don't feel like it is anymore.
No, you're right. I mean, but my gosh, you have impressionable kids out there. You saw the kids rolling down the hill.
Yeah.
I mean, and so you've got impressionable kids out there, and they're seeing all this stuff going on, and they're hearing about it, and they hear the nastiness from fans, whether it's here or in Iowa City. What kind of role model situation are they getting? I mean, it saddens me.
Yeah, the whole thing, man, it's just really odd just from the way that this started, which was the very vague press release that Iowa put out. And then, I don't know, and maybe I was naive when that press release came out last Thursday. I think it was Thursday when the two schools, or Wednesday, the two schools. It was Wednesday. Yeah, I'm sorry.
It was Wednesday.
Yeah, it was on Wednesday. Maybe I was a little bit naive to think that this would probably be. Did you? I thought it was. I thought that this thing was over. And I guess, like, to me, I wanted to ask this today, but it really didn't make sense to ask Jamie Pollard this or President Winterstein. If we could get President Harold or Gary Barta on the record, it's like, what changed between that and yesterday, where the Iowa president came out with a fairly bullish tone, I thought, on the series, because, you know, it seemed like they were holding hands, singing Kumbaya on Wednesday, let's move on. And then yesterday, It was like all hell had broken loose with the Iowa president. I don't think today happens if the Iowa president isn't on video speaking to the Daily Iowan like he did yesterday. Does that timeline make sense?
Yeah, it does. The whole thing's been handled horribly. It's stuff that probably could have been handled internally. So it seems like everything's just trying to. Who gets the last word? I mean, when is the last word? I mean, now.
Do you think today is?
No, I don't think Iowa's going to come back tomorrow and say something. Maybe. I don't know. I don't have any idea. This whole back and forth thing is nauseating. It really is. While waiting for somebody to come forward, if somebody comes forward, there's still work that can be done. Meet in Grinnell. Go to Grinnell and let's have a meeting. Meanwhile, Iowa State can figure out how to beat Baylor, and Iowa can figure out how to beat Middle Tennessee State.
Yeah, again, I just think, too, and maybe you correct me if you think I'm wrong here, I just think there's a difference between, like, the criminal aspect and then what the school should do. If there was a criminal, like, case or anything like that, to me that's, like, the university should get together regardless. If there's a police report, or let's say five police reports come tomorrow based off of the press conference today, the police chief Newton was up there and he gave the phone number and all that stuff. Or if not, like the presidents need to get together and come to some sort of a truce on this deal regardless, right?
Right, and I don't know how that's going to happen. I don't have any idea how that's going to happen, because let's get this out there. It's just a very, very minor portion of the 61,500 people at Saturday's game and whatever Iowa holds. It's just a handful of people making things horrible. And I don't know how you regulate that. I don't have any idea. But, you know, people say that there's none of that goes on in the NFL, in among pro football stadiums or whatever.
Yeah, right.
That's wrong. It's wrong. There is stuff that goes on.
I'm a Vikings fan. I've seen our fans do it, and I've had it happen to me in Kansas City. It absolutely happened.
It's like wherever there's beer sold or given away at tailgates or whatever, there's going to be stuff like that happening. So I just hope that, you know, and I suspect that next year's Iowa State game in Iowa City, everything will be cool. I mean, there won't be any problems. You know, we'll go 5 years and everything will be great. And I just hope it goes 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 more years after that and it goes great too.
I feel like tensions have been ratcheted up, though. Maybe not even with the fans, because I'm a firm believer, and I'm very active on Twitter. I don't think you can take, like, what you see on Twitter or message boards and, like, wrap entire groups of fans into those. Like, that's the extreme of the extreme. But I guess I'm just sensing, though, it just seems like over recent years with comments from both programs and then what we've seen the last couple of weeks with the administrations, I don't know, and I wasn't around in the 70s, but I just feels like this is ratcheted up to a level that I've never seen before as far as the distaste for one another. Am I embellishing it? And there's a lot of good that comes from it too. Carson King and that whole story, that's great. But I don't know, man. From where I'm sitting, it seems pretty bitter right now.
I've never seen it like this. I've never seen it this bitter. And you know what? I think our administrators have to shoulder some of the blame for this as well. With Brian Ferentz saying what he said, with what was one of the first things Jamie Pollard did when he came to Ames?
He built the billboard.
Built the billboard in eastern Iowa. So, you know, so with all that stuff going on, our leaders, and then Matt Campbell doesn't say the University of Iowa or Hawkeyes, but I get that too. It's nothing against Iowa or Iowa State. That's his Ohio State Michigan thing coming out.
Yeah.
So I don't think we should make a big deal of that. But yeah, I mean, our administrators have to be nice to each other as well. And I get it. What Jamie did was all in good fun. That's what Jamie does.
And to his credit, it wasn't much of a rivalry at that point either.
It was no rivalry at that point in time. So, yeah. So, you know, it has to start with our administrators.
Well, let's just talk football from here on out, if you're good with that. I kind of let off yesterday's show, and I'm not fatigued with the band thing. I'm really not. I want to just get to the bottom of it, but it just seems like no matter where we turn, there's really no facts and information. I thought Pollard did a pretty good job of laying out a timeline and where Iowa State was at. What we need to do is just lock these. I'm a pro wrestling fan. Hell in a Cell, it's coming up. Let's just put them in a steel cage and not violently, but let's have like a good old fashioned debate. Let's put Iowa's president, Iowa's AD, vice versa at Iowa State, and just let them go.
Or let the Board of Regents get involved and do their job for a change. They can do this too.
That's a great point. Where should they be at in this situation?
Front and center. This is their universities that are embarrassing the Board of Regents, that are embarrassing the state of Iowa. It's not just Iowa State. It's not, you know, it's Iowa too when Iowa State plays there. So Board of Regents are dropping the ball on this as well.
Good points. Randy Peterson, I'm Chris Williams, Cyclone Insider here with the Des Moines Register on 1460 KXNO. Huge game in Waco. Let's do talk football because this is, I think, one of, when we were putting schedules together back in July and circling wins and losses, I think everybody thought this Baylor game, when you look at the Big 12 and the hierarchy of what we thought the league would be this year, and then, you know, Iowa State loses to Iowa, but that's a non-conference game, so it doesn't affect the conference order. Seeing what we saw last week, and Iowa State, it certainly looks like they took a step forward. This is one of the bigger games of the year when you factor in who they're playing, being on the road, first Big 12 game, really an opportunity to get off on the right foot.
Yeah, exactly. And it, interesting that Baylor was favored last week, and now Iowa State's favored now. Yeah, you're exactly 100% right. This is a big game for both teams because both teams have programs that are football programs that have very similar situations right now. Matt Rhule is trying to build his team up from what happened at Baylor over the years, and he's doing a pretty darn good job of it. Matt Campbell is building Iowa State football up from the horrendous way it played at most of the time before he was here. So it's two programs trending positive, and I don't think, regardless what happens Saturday, I don't think that's going to be the end of the world for either team. But if Iowa State can go to Baylor, win on the road, it's going to be in the mid-90s at that game, winning, you know, it's going to be pretty heavy heat. You know, it's Iowa State can really make a statement, as if they haven't already. But nonetheless, they're going to be facing a very good quarterback as well, Charlie Brewer. So it's a huge game for Iowa State.
Yeah, and there's a little bit of spice to it too. I don't care what the coaches say. They've both tried to downplay it so far this week. But you know, we were both there last year. That was one of the chippier Iowa State football games I've ever covered, probably. A lot of the guys who are involved in those situations are gone, but you know how these locker rooms are. It's a brotherhood. It's a family type deal. I mean, I think these two teams will be really out to get one another on Saturday. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, no, exactly. And these teams both have defenses that hit, too. But I mean, Baylor's playing defense a little bit. They have defenses that are aggressive. And we saw that, obviously, last year, you know, when stuff carried over to the sidelines. And then eventually, was that the game that Kniffel got thrown out and then he came back?
Yeah. Well, he accidentally got thrown out. Yeah. They threw out the wrong guy, and then he came running back out.
To
and
the,
then
the WWE song or
yeah,
something.
Yeah, Sound Off redid it, and they put the Stone Cold song back on it. And then it was actually Montgomery who got ejected.
Right. Yeah, so, I mean, yeah, people know about this stuff. And Rule was asked about it yesterday on the teleconference, and Campbell was asked about it a little bit today, insinuated about it at least. So the players know what happened, and I'm certain that it's not going to be anything drastic or anything blatant, and hopefully it's nothing horrendously bad, but it will be a hard-hitting game for sure.
What is it like playing in Waco? You've covered a lot of games there. It's just a different type of place.
It is a different type of place, and it used to be with Art Briles was the coach there, and they were running up the score on everybody, and the fans were getting were fans
70
were,
to 70.
Yeah, exactly. My God, I covered that one. The fans were into it because they loved to see offense. To be honest with you, I haven't been to Waco the last two times because last year I was in South Carolina. You were in South Carolina too.
Yeah, we had
the last time they were there in South Carolina because the Puerto Rico basketball tournament got moved, and then the previous time Iowa State was supposed to play at Baylor in the first year of the new stadium, none of the local reporters could get out of town because torrential rains in Waco, or in the Dallas area, so we couldn't even get out of here. So I'll be curious to see what kind of atmosphere there is there. But generally, the Baylor fans aren't really crazy. I don't remember them doing anything. The Friday nights before games were congenial at the two or three restaurants that Baylor has. That Waco has. So yeah, I don't necessarily think it's a huge home field advantage for Baylor.
I think the one thing that's interesting about Baylor, from what I understand of the football deal, the teams have to stay like an hour away, and they oftentimes get like stuck in traffic. That happened to Iowa State the last time I know. I do think that, and I don't think it's like set up by Baylor to be that, but I think it's a very different game day routine from what I understand for the visiting team because of the logistics around it. They just don't have hotels there big enough for, you know, however many staff and stuff is traveling with a football program. You got to do that. It's an extra like hour 45 minutes in a bus. Then you got to warm up. It's just a different deal.
And that could work against you as well. As you know, like you said, 2 years ago when they were down there, there was a traffic jam or the accident on a road.
Yeah, they actually almost had to postpone the game for like 15, 20 minutes because Iowa State got stuck in such terrible traffic.
Yeah, so that happens. So you are staying 45 minutes to an hour in I can't remember the name. I can't remember the name of the town. But yeah, you are staying out because, like you said, there's very few hotels in Waco that are large enough to host a team and with all the meeting rooms and everything that goes along with it. So that's a challenge as well.
Lastly, Iowa State hung up 72 points over the weekend on Louisiana Monroe. What did you take from that? Like, how do you feel differently about Iowa State today compared to last Tuesday when we talked?
What I took from that game was Brock Purdy. Brock Purdy, he was masterful after the first two possessions. At bouncing back from those first two possessions, he was fairly mostly pinpoint with these passes. He ran. He did the pump fake thing. Spread the ball out quite a bit, including to the tight ends. So, and whether he was playing Louisiana, Monroe, or Iowa, or Baylor, I don't care what the competition was, he still performed. And that was my deal for three quarters. That was my deal.
Think Iowa State wins on Saturday?
I didn't. I picked Iowa State to lose a while back, but I'm pretty sure in Friday or Saturday's paper I'll pick Iowa State to win. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm in the same boat. I felt like everything really finally clicked for them, and I think Baylor is a good team. I don't know if they They had a really nice bowl win last year. I just don't know if we've seen enough proof that they're at that level yet, but we'll see. They got a lot of really good athletes, and have a good trip. What are you going to do on Friday night? What's the Baylor hotspot? They got, like, barbecue down there. I went to a place when I was down there with women's basketball year that was pretty good. It was, like, some big honky-tonk, like, barbecue spot. It's right over by, like, the Irwin Center. No, the Irwin Center is in Austin, excuse me. But you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, I can't think of the name of it, though. Yeah,
Birch. Had a pretty good steak there.
Birch and I went there once. I can't remember the name of it. I usually go to Crickets.
Yeah, Crickets. That's what I'm talking about.
That's not a honky-tonk place.
Yeah, there was honky-tonk going on when I was there.
Okay, whatever.
Crickets, yeah. They got good, like, Texas beers and stuff there, too. It's very, like, local.
They still sell Bud Light there, so that's good. Yeah, it was Crickets. It's right there by...
That's what I'm talking about.
Where the team sits. Yeah, it's Crickets. Yeah.
Yeah.
They've got almost lifelike Jenga. That's kind of cool.
Yeah. The night I was there, there was some honky-tonk band going on.
I've never seen a band there, but yeah, the pool table's back in the back.
Yeah.
All right.
There you go. There's Peterson's. If you're a Cyclone fan, don't approach Peterson on Friday night. I don't want people bothering you when you're out in leisure. But Crickets, that's the place. That's Randy Peterson approved.
Yeah, I like Crickets.
All right, he'll be there on Friday night. All right, he's Randy Peterson. I'm Chris Williams. Thanks to Tommy Birch earlier. That's it for this week's Cyclone Insider here with the Des Moines Register on 1460.